This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 122. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers 3. And today I'm here with my brilliant two co-hosts, Phil Oakley and Henry Viola Hare. It's been a very, very busy week. Myself and Henry were treated by our sponsors last week. And we're going to share with you a little something that we did last weekend. We actually went to see Cirque Soleil in London, very posh end of town. Henry and I nearly got chased out because we're like, what are these two vagabonds doing this side of the town? But we went there and wanted to say a big, big thank you to the sponsors of this podcast, ShareScope, SharePad, that invited us along to that particular show. And we were with Investment Royalty in Rosie Carr of IC, Investors Chronicle, Algie Hall as well. What were the other names there as well, Henry? Jamie Ward?
Oh, we had Ramin of Pension Craft. Very good YouTube channel, if anybody's not listened to it.
You know, so yeah, we're very, very blessed. And of course, Phil was meant to be there, but had better things to do. You know, he's too good to be sharing the night with us little plebs, but there we go. Right. Guys, I'm conscious of the time. We overran last time, so we're not going to do any other chit chat. We're just going to jump straight in to this, unless one of you two guys have got something significant to say about anything. Phil, anything?
No.
No? Henry?
All good, mate.
No. All right. Okay. So today, big day in the markets. Okay. Jeremy, whose surname lots of people pronounce differently, came out with the budget and started talking about British ISA and a few other bits and pieces, and an additional £5,000, which can be utilised to be spent on UK, I'm not sure if it's listed or UK stocks, whatever it is, an extra £5,000 for those of us that have got that extra £5,000 to invest. My thoughts straight away was some people are going to reduce their exposure in the main ISA and then spend it elsewhere and then use that extra five to put into a UK listed company. I don't know. I just wanted to get your first thoughts on that British ISA stuff, because there was so much talk and leaks about it all straight away. Go to you first, Phil. Did you have any thoughts on that today?
I mean, any sort of increase in the tax-free savings allowance is good. But it's, as you point out, Pete, you know, if you've got 20,000 to put away, you're doing quite well in life. And another 5,000, you know, so much the better. I'm not sure it really changes much. My view is, just because you've got 5,000 to put into British shares, only do it if you can find the right shares to invest in. You know, there's no point putting £5,000 in British shares just because they're British, and you end up with either losing money or making sort of subpar returns from it. But if you can do it and you have that amount of money, then it's not a bad thing. But I don't think it changes, you know, the marketplace for UK shares drastically.
Fair points there, mate. Thank you for sharing. Any thoughts, Henry, or were you too busy at the dentist to take any notice of that today?
No, I did catch the budget today. I'd agree with Phil. You know, I think if you've got an investment allocation and an investment approach, suddenly narrowing yourself to just investing in the UK for a portion of your ISA, probably not the smartest move you could make. Like you say, Peter, if you want to transfer part of your allowance from your main ISA into this British ISA and keep your British allocation in the British ISA and then invest internationally elsewhere, personally, I would suggest that that is probably a more diversified way of going about it. The main thought I had, and I think I made this point on an earlier podcast, is that I think the government is really going about this the wrong way. There is a reason that the UK market is underperforming. There is a reason we are unloved. And what they ought to be doing is addressing those issues, whether it is tax, whether it is infrastructure, whether it's skills base, whether it's market liquidity, I don't know. But I don't think that trying to funnel a number of retail investors into UK shares is really going to move the needle as much as they're hoping. Personally, I'd like to have seen something more along the lines of capital allowances being expensed, or tax breaks for staff, or subsidies for apprenticeships or the like in the technology sector, something that would have made a difference to UK businesses as opposed to financial engineering for shareholders. So I'm quite underwhelmed by that news.
Yeah, very, very good points there made, very, very acutely there, and really appreciate that. I took a bit of note today. I was watching this, and basically 12:29 before Jeremy Hunt came out with the budget speech, starting at 12:30, I looked at the FTSE All share, and it stood at 4,191.94. Then he began his talk, and he said what he said about various different things and what he's going to do for the economy and so on and so forth. And the FTSE All share rose in the first, half an hour or so, and climbed, went to 4,198. And then as he carried on, it dipped. And then when he finished, the market just sat around for a little while and went, actually, some of this isn't too bad. And then it climbed again, FTSE All share, and ended up with a high today of 4,211. Right? So it climbed to a high of 4,211 and then finished at 4,199. And overall, it was up 0.5% today. So the market wasn't quite sure what to do with all of this particular news regarding it. And I think we'll find out over the course of the next month or so. And if it is a smart move, it will mean that more people will be encouraged to come into the market between now and the end of the tax year. And it might then give it another boost when the new ISA season and tax year commences at the beginning of April. So we will see. But I think it's a small, I don't want to say gimmick, but there's far more important things going on that needs to be done about the whole market infrastructure, I think, in agreement with you both. And also about whether stamp duty is too high, whether there's enough liquidity, whether or not it should be the pension funds and institutions that should be forced to actually invest more in the UK, because they've got more bang for their buck regarding our pensions and institutional pensions, force them to be putting 5% of their monies at the very, very minimum into the UK stock market, because it's dwindling as we speak as to how much they're putting into the UK stock market. FTSE today closed up 0.43%. So closed at 7,679. We had a high today, intraday high of 7,701. That 7,000 barrier is still sitting there, and we can't seem to close above it at present. It'd be nice to see that happen within the next couple of days before the week's out, if not carrying on through March. I've already covered the FTSE All share. FTSE AIM All share closed up 0.37% at 737. So that's still sitting above that 700 support level. So that's all good regarding the markets today. Conscious that I need to talk about one stock before we start, Phil, and go to a stock from you. Mentioned back in December at Twin Peaks 117, good old Greg's, which brought a cheer to our young man's eye there, Henry Viola, the man who loves Greg's. And I know you don't mind a Greg's occasionally as well, Phil. Mentioned Greg's as a recommendation to go away and research, nearer to 26 quid. In December, came up with a reasonably good update in January, and then yesterday came out and absolutely smashed numbers and basically cheered everybody up regarding their performance. And then what did they do on top of that? Decided to pay a special dividend. And the dividend will also be going to, I think, about 80% of the employees as well. So they're going to be paying out a dividend of 40 pence plus the normal, sorry, special dividend 40 pence plus 62 pence. So that's £1.02 per share it's delivering. And the shares are currently £28.50, up 9.5% year to date. And everyone's having a sausage roll by the looks of it. Any of you guys been watching the news on Greggs?
It's a great business. it's doing so well because it just knows what to do to keep its customers happy, and it's been doing this for a long time. It's selling a product at a very fair price. I think that, you know, cash-strapped commuters, workers, lunchtime workers, it plays into that theme quite nicely. You're going to get people who turn their nose up at, you know, saying that they're selling a lot of junk food. But to me, there's no difference really from what they're selling to what, you know, McDonald's are selling. And
I'd argue it's better, Phil.
Yeah, you know, or prêt à manger. I mean, okay, there's a few salads and stuff in there, but it's
terrible stuff. Avoid it like the plague.
It's a great business. You know, you look at the size of the stores that they've got, and you look at the volume of stuff that they're selling, and you know they're making great profits, great returns on those stores. They're going where the people are, so they're going into like railway stations, airports, roadside. It's a business that's still got plenty of legs, and it's a great success story, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers, and it's like-for-like sales 13.7% year on year. PBT, profit before tax, plus 26.97. I'm just thinking, wowza. And they just seem to be just doing, like you say, absolutely everything right. So a UK success story. I know that most people aren't friends of the Sun newspaper, but it was that center stage there. Greggs, a 2.6 billion success story, 80 years in the baking, which I thought was a quite clever headline. But yeah, and they got some of their stores from, what was it, Associated British Foods for an absolute song many years ago, which I thought was clever. I bet Associated British Foods are now thinking to themselves, oof. I mean, bit of a mistake there.
I think the thing is as well, Pete, the other big story is that Greggs now is the market leader in breakfast sales. It's got nearly 20% share of the market, and it's actually overtaken McDonald's.
Has it really?
Yeah. It's got nearly 20%.
Wowza! See, I knew I missed a trick when I didn't buy it. When I was wailing like a banshee to you, Henry, back in December before Phil came on, and I was saying I wish I'd bought them at 10 quid, and now it's going to be nudging 30 quid before the year's out. I'm like, oh, what an idiot, man! What an idiot!
And the thing is, Pete,
taking over McDonald's.
I think the thing is that Greggs haven't actually been concentrating on breakfast for that long.
No, it's always lunchtime.
They just do it well. Well, I think the other thing, every Greggs store I've been in, bar one, which I'm going to call a fluke, I've never had to wait. I've walked straight in. They've had exactly what I want. I've been in and out the shop almost instantly and really satisfied with the produce I've bought. I mean, usually it's a bag of sausage rolls, but, you know, whereas a lot of other shops, you know, you walk into a prep and it's like, geez, they've got four people on the till, so they're not understaffed, but the queues are enormous. And if you go in, I mean, certainly in the city, if you go in much past about 1:45 in the afternoon, the shelves are empty. I've never had that at Greggs. I've always been able to get freshly cooked sausage rolls instantly at a great price. You know, I think they're doing something right, because with prep, after a while, you go, well, you know, forget it. Every time I go in here, either I'm losing half my lunch break queuing around for a soggy sandwich, or they've not got anything when I go. So what's the point?
Well, Henry, this is not about you turning up to Greg's, having me chauffeured there in a limo, and they look and go, it's Henry, and they just, everyone else has to move out of the queue. Are you sure?
I'm not quite that famous yet.
Right. Okay. Okay. So I just thought I'd check. Right. Okay. We've done the Greggs and the sausage rolls. Phil, let's get onto your first doc or whatever topic you want to talk about first, please, mate.
I think just before I do, I thought it might just be useful to spend a couple of minutes talking about, you know, the big story or the consistent story that keeps coming across is the number of takeovers and the cheapness of the UK stock market. And, you know, we're just seeing more and more of them now. And I think this is something that is going to keep going on.
I think you're absolutely right, Phil. I mean, the volume of offers we are getting for really quality names in the UK is quite astonishing. You know, Currys got snapped up not that long ago. I think it might even have been earlier this week. Now, the last time I went into a Currys shop, to be honest, I was appalled. They'd got no stock. The staff couldn't help me. And I remember them as being really quite a good brand. I'd never have figured them for a takeover target. And yet somebody's come in, offered a premium and snapped them up. And it seems to be the same story across the market.
Henry hasn't quite been snapped up yet because they've rejected the offer.
Has it not gone through?
It's not gone through yet, mate. It's there. The basically the CEO, sorry, not the CEO, one of the fund managers is kicking off saying, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to lose more and more companies. And this is the reason why even Currys may have to consider, you know, listing abroad. And I'm like, because they're basically saying that if this was a US company, they'd be getting 25% more. So they're basically saying they want £2 per share.
With all respect to our esteemed
175, I think they've been offered or something like that. So that's still going on, mate. It hasn't actually gone yet, but they're not happy with the price. They're wanting more. And now they're coming out saying, you know what, if we're not careful, we're going to lose another company to the US. You know, Hambro veteran fund manager James Lowen and Clive Beagle said an acceptable offer for the retail should be £1 per share, versus what they're being offered now. So, yeah, not happy. So we'll see. But Currys is still in the mix. We'll see what happens with that. But lots of lowly shares. What did you want to add, Phil?
I think it's interesting that even at the current share price of Currys, which is a sort of around the sort of 67 pence mark, it's only on 8x earnings. And, you know, some people might say, well, that's all it's worth. But, you know, clearly there's a fight on here. And I understand the concerns of fund managers who get frustrated if they feel that they're getting, you know, taken for a ride and that companies are being taken out so cheaply. But you know, there's a no end of, you know, of candidates, I think, particularly I think in the mid and small cap market, where, you know, you're looking at market capitalizations of, I don't know, 3 billion or less, or even into the hundreds of millions. And that's not a big price tag for, you know, big corporates from the US or, you know, in China in the case of Currys, all private equity. And, you know, you could see businesses that have got, you know, falling on very hard times. I know you talked about Watches of Switzerland a few weeks ago. You know, that share is like over 50% off its high. It's now on 9x earnings, and that's reduced earnings. You know, people talk about ITV all the time. ITV Studios, I think, would be quite an interesting buy for somebody. And even like, you know, companies like Marks and Spencer's, you know, on sub 10 times earnings, Jet2, which I've talked about a lot, on 8 times earnings. These are the kind of shares that you think, you know, could get taken out. I mean, WH Smith was mentioned in a newspaper article this morning. That's on 13 times earnings. You're not buying that for the high street shops in the UK. You're buying it for the retail concessions in airports. And that's a global business. And that's on 13 times earnings. And it's, you know, looking like it's going to grow its earnings 10-12% for the next 3 years. So there is a lot of value out there. And I think the other thing that I've seen this week is that there was something on Market Watch, which is, for those of you who don't know, is like an online news feed for investors. And it was saying that UK investors are ploughing ever-increasing amounts of money into foreign shares. And this sort of brings into what we started talking about at the beginning of the podcast, in that, you know, do you buy these shares and wait for a takeover and it doesn't happen, and at the same time you could have been invested in a US stock that's going gangbusters? I mean, that's the dilemma that's facing people. You can have these shares which look cheap, but if you're buying them for a takeover that doesn't happen, you're not going to make any money from them. But I think it's going to be very interesting.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Absolutely. I mean, the one that happened, I think it was yes, we're on this track of the days, guys, was Spirent, an old friend turned enemy of mine, because I bought the shares a good while back now, it seems. And I, you know, rather than, I think it was, let me just get the dates right. 10th of March, 2022, I bought Spirent, having done my intrinsic value and SO, some of the parts sort of valuation on it. And I had it at £4 all day long, right? So I picked up the shares at £2.43, Phil, right? It's going to be involved in 5G. It's going to be involved in all the testing for all of the, all to do with AI and tech and all the rest of it. It's going to be a go-to stock, right? I even had it as my proactive stock, a stock challenge that I do against fund managers. So I put my head up on the parapet and went, my stock Spirent, right, for 2023. January, I think it was the second or third trading day of the year, I own the stock. I've tipped it as my, well, I shouldn't use the words. Yeah, I actually did tip it because it was, that's what the competition was. And I tipped it going into the new year as my stock of the year. I think it was two or three trading days in. Wallop, smashed it with a profit warning. And I was like, wowza. And I'm in the competition. I'm thinking, I can't just go back and say after the first week of the year, I've actually sold the stock myself, so I'm not sure I want to keep it in the competition. So I held the stock, no excuses. Regardless, I should have just gone, maybe this is not going to be the year. But the intrinsic value was there at £4, got smashed, right? It's now at £2 or less. And I'm going, someone's going to have to go and buy that now, maybe now for £3.50. Cut long story short, because I don't want to bore people with this, right? 4 profit warnings happened during 2023 on Spirent. After the fourth one, you know, I've got the patience of a saint, I have, when it comes to dogs of stocks, right? And some people say, Pete, and they'll say to Phil, and they'll say to Henry, one profit warning, get out. Why? Because profit warnings ordinarily come in threes. Not for me, mate. I'll go 4 rounds and get knocked down in each round. Finally, I capitulate at 95 pence, Phil, right? In November of last year, November of 2023, I've gone, I'm out. I'm done. I can't take no more pain. Took the hit, significant hit, by the way. I got out at nine, just more than 95 pence, right? And the consolation for me is that my exit, right, signal the bottoming of the shares, right? Now, who doesn't want to signal the bottom of the shares when they rise 100% over the next 4 months, even though they might have gone out without you, right? So now you've got an American company going, we'll have a bit of that. And it's a £1 billion offer, but the shares are going to be taken out for dividends plus £1.75. These shares are worth £3, mate. So another bargain has been swooped upon by an overseas predator, and it's going to be taken out. And you know what? The board have gone, we've had enough as well. And they've already recommended the offer at £1.75. So another one of our tech stocks have gone for £1 billion. You go back far enough and you look at what they've bought over the X amount of years, last 10 years maybe, they've spent more than that on mergers and acquisitions, Phil, that the whole group is now going for. Absolutely staggering mismanagement of the company. Another tech stock with relationships with all manner of different sensitive information is going to an overseas predator, but it's all right because this predator is American. So therefore, all our personal information is fine and our security is fine. Is it not? Guys, any answers to that?
I think the sort
Bill,
of...
Bill, you look bemused.
I am a bit. I mean, I'm not sure... If this company hadn't been taken over, I'm not sure you'd want to buy it. You know, after four profit warnings, it's a brave person to go and buy this. But I think the golden rule here, and this is something that I think we can often forget as investors, is that often the value of a company to an acquirer is a lot more than it is as a standalone business on the stock exchange, because a buyer can do things with it and create more value from it, like, you know, cutting out costs or cross-selling, running it better. And this is always a sort of thing to bear in mind. But, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing and all that. But this is what I think, you know, you should do if you're looking at shares in the UK market. You're thinking, okay, who could buy this? Trying to identify who could buy it. And then trying to work out, you know, what they could pay for it and still make it stack up. Rather than, oh, it's cheap, it's depressed, I'll buy it and hope it gets taken over. There has to be a bit more thought to it than that. It has to be a strategic fit for somebody else, or it's so cheap that a financial buyer can go in and make a great deal. I mean, it seems to me the easiest trade at the moment is to buy a British share, buy a British company, and then go relist it on the US stock market and clear off. Job done.
Phil, stop. Do not give our CEOs and CFOs any other ideas, mate, to deplete the UK stock market, mate. Please don't suggest that.
I just have. there we are.
So, yeah, let me just finish on this Spirent thing, right? So the company that's taken it over, right, is NASDAQ listed Viavi, if I pronounce that right, VIAVI, formerly JDS Uniphase. So they're big in the investing space. I have got my eyes on that company now, right? And at some point, I'm going to be watching that company, and betwixt now and whenever, I'm going to buy some shares in that NASDAQ listed company, right? Because they're going to shred that company and shred Spirent and utilize the best parts and sell off the bits that they don't want. And they're going to benefit by the tune of at least $1 billion on that particular stock. And I'm going to be there going, thank you very much, at some point.
Unless they turn out to be just as incompetent as Spirent management and also have a car crash and four profit warnings.
You just had to go there, didn't you, Henry?
Open goals.
Not all management company are duds, mate. Only the ones that I pick. Only the ones that I pick. After I've done all my research, they then scupper it. Right, Phil, any more on the takeovers, mate, you want to share?
No, I think that's
no, it. You smashed it there. We are vulnerable. I'm going to be doing, just ladies and gents, I'm going to be doing a panel session on Saturday at the Master Investor Show. with Gervais Williams, Stephen Yeu, Charlie Huggins, and George O'Connor. And we are going to be asking them the question, why is the UK stock market so undervalued? And which stocks should we be considering for long-term potential? So that's absolutely timely. So if you can, we'd love to see you at the Master Investor Show on Saturday. I'll be doing that with the Investing Matters team in the Southeast. But please, please, please do come along. It's going to be a fab day. 3,500 to 5,000 people there. Lots of stores, lots of other companies. And Jim Mellon will be doing his Sage of Omaha routine, which everyone loves to hear. Right, Henry. Give us your first stop. We'll go back to Phil in a minute because he's covered all takeover stuff. Give him a breather. Give us your first stop, please, sir.
Well, I've got two UK ones this week. My first one is an engineering business, which I hope listeners will know. And it's one of those names that, to me, represents great British engineering in the best possible sense. It is Renishaw PLC. The ticket is RSW. And this is a global engineering technology company that specializes in precision technology for metrology and healthcare. And for those of you that aren't aware of what metrology is, it's the scientific study of measurement. Now, the company designs and develops systems for ensuring precision, control, and reliability in engineering, in addition to being a leader in additive manufacturing, which for those of us that aren't engineers is 3D printing. And it's 3D printing from metal powder, which is quite an interesting technology because certainly when I think of 3D printing, I think of a little home printer that uses plastic polymers. But actually, you can apply the same process to metal powder and you basically print liquid metal and create metal structures instead of plastic polymer ones. Now, the business is quite a large one. It's on a market cap of £3 billion. It's always been a quality business as long as I've known it. It's got a return on capital of about 16%, which is very healthy. And it's forecast to grow its earnings per share over the next 3 years by about 7% a year. So it is forecasting growth. And I think that's possibly a reflection of its global customer base, to be honest. Unlike domestic UK businesses, which are perhaps struggling a little bit, if you are diversified around the world, you've got lots of markets to sell to, and therefore lots of different customer bases to sell to. The share pays a small dividend. It's about 2% a year, which is covered, I believe. And it's on a fairly cheap price. I think it's closer to its 52-week lows than its 52-week highs. So it's caught my eye as one of those great British giants that I think is perhaps being overlooked by the market in the desperation to buy all things American. So it could be one for listeners to go and have a look at.
Interesting name, Henry. It's been up there and been mentioned as a quality stock for some time. But if they want to get, you know, a bit of a sprint on to get into vogue, they need to mention something to do with AI.
AI.
Have they done that yet in their RNS? Have they mentioned that fabled word that gets them accelerated and re-rating? Have they done that yet? Or they're a sleepy British engineer? Too posh to say artificial intelligence?
I think they're too busy doing real work with real, you know, real technology as opposed to pie-in-the-sky robots that are going to take over the planet.
So your answer is no, they have not mentioned AI yet.
Exactly.
Right.
Not that
Phil,
I've
you've
seen.
Have you looked at Renishaw before, Phil?
Yeah. It's
what are your thoughts, mate? Give Henry a boost or a doomster on it. Come on.
That's a nice company.
Ooh, go on.
It sort of fits. You know, we do have some very good engineering companies listed on the UK stock market, and it's high end. Engineering, manufacturing, a lot of it is very niche, problem solving, very, very good in terms of like lowering the cost of the customer. So it's a massive sort of enabler of higher profits for its customers. This is a really well-run business, run by basically the two guys who run it, which is David McMurty and Daniel Deer. They still own about 55% of the shares. And they have tried to sell the business and no one's come along and bought it, because I think two things. I think is the price. The price tag has always been pretty punchy on this company. And also, I think that they are very proud of what they've developed with this company in terms of its culture. The company is not short-termist. It has fantastic relationships with its customers. And it invests huge amounts of money, you know, in research and development as a proportion of sales to develop new products. And unlike a lot of companies, it doesn't mess around with the accounting. It's very, very clean accounting on this. So this is a company with a lot to admire. The issue with it is that it's very sensitive to, you know, changes in the global economy, and its profits are very, very volatile. They move up and down a lot. So whilst the general trend in revenues and profits over the long haul is probably upwards, given the markets that it's exposed to, it's a rocky ride. You know, you'll get big ups and downs with it. But it's a business I like a lot. I admire a lot. And I hope it does well. And I hope eventually it will find new shareholders that carry on the great culture that the company has.
There you go. Brilliant. Love that insight, Phil. Thank you very, very much for that. I'm going to go abroad now with mine. Mine's very a random walk, and I see this sometimes. I was looking at on SharePad, and I've put in the search for stocks hitting 52-week highs, and I'm always looking out for anomalies. And I saw this, and I thought, what's going on there? What have I missed regarding this particular stock? And three stocks were sitting on Monday at all-time highs. Forget about 52-week highs, all-time highs. One of them was Bank of Georgia. The other one was Georgia Capital. And the third one I'm going to talk about is TBC Bank Group, UK-based banking group, okay? London-listed TBC, out of Tbilisi, Georgia. And essentially, as a bank, it's same sort of activities. Business activities involves universal banking operations within Georgia and Uzbekistan. And the bank is focused on financial services activities, and most of its total assets relate to banking, insurance, leasing, brokerage, corporate advisory services. And its operating segments include corporate micro, basically SMEs, enterprises, retail, corporate centers, and other operations. Most of its revenues are derived from the retail segment, which includes non-business individuals or individual business customers. But I want to point this bit out. I'm not going to go into too much about this bit here because it can be quite sensitive, and I don't want to get us pulled off air by forces unbeknown to us. But on the 22nd of February 2022, something significant happened, which was Russia began the invasion of the Ukraine. Okay. The 28th of February 2022, ticker symbol TBCG, shares hit the low of £9.60. That's the 28th, 6 days later. The shares are currently sitting at £32.50. That's how much the shares have gone up in the space of 2 years. 2 years, literally, to 2 weeks ago. The shares have gone from £9.60 to £32.50. Now, sanctions against Russia, blah, 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 blah. Someone's pouring money into Georgia for a reason for those three companies to be at all-time highs. What's the company doing? Basically, we're looking at profits going up year to date. The thing that interests me about this bit as well is growing digital customers, right? On the last accounts, up 33%. in 12 months, right? And registers customers up 40% year to date. Where are all these customers coming from? Could this continue? I do not know. But right now it's on a PE of 5.28, yielding 5.39. The shares have already gone up 3.5-fold, right? No one is talking about TBC Bank. Maybe because of what's going on, people going, we don't want to go with that. It's, you know, Russia's not far away, da, da, da. But it's one of those stocks that nobody wants to buy because, but someone's buying the stock for it to go from £9.60 to 33 quid. Henry, any thoughts on TBC? I'm not saying, there's something I found. I'm not saying go out and buy it now after it's gone up from £9.60 to 33 quid nearly. I'm just saying this thing's at all-time high. No one's chasing this particular stock. No one's tipped it anywhere in a magazine. It just keeps gliding up there on its Jack Jones.
I am super wary of this. I've seen the Bank of Georgia for a long time, and on paper it looks like a super high-quality business. Ticks a lot of metrics. TBC Bank, I have also seen, ticks a lot of metrics that I like. Good returns. It's cheap, nice dividend yield that is covered. The risk for me is the political risk. You know, if you were going to invade the country next door and knew you were going to do it, what do you think the share price is going to do when you do? You're going to tank the share prices, and then what are you going to do? Buy through shell companies. So to me, this is, it might be a little tinfoil hat that, but for me, the political risk and the geographic risk just make this an absolute no-go for me. I wouldn't dare touch it.
Absolutely. Fair point. The other thing to mention as well is that Georgia is still in the process of looking for accession to NATO. Sorry, the EU, to the EU. So there's all that stuff going on, which obviously is going to irk certain people in Russia as well. Phil, have you looked at anything in Georgia?
I have.
That's not a euphemism, mate. You didn't need to smile hard there.
No, it's actually last week I wrote a piece for my CityWire, my CityWire job, which is the elite companies. If you go to the CityWire website, elite companies, I wrote a piece on the top 10 shares that are being backed by the elite fund managers, and one of those shares is Georgia Capital. And this is an investment trust, basically investing in Georgia. Trades at a big discount to net asset value for the reasons that Henry has touched on, but actually going great guns. And the Georgian economy is incredibly strong. GDP growth in Georgia last year was over 7%. You know, much faster than what's going on in most industrialized nations at the moment. And the thing to remember about banks, as banks are literally geared plays on a nation's economy. And it's quite interesting. Over the last sort of year since I've been doing a lot of work for elite companies, for CityWire, looking at global shares, emerging markets like India, and looking at the banks and the profitability of the banks in these markets, and they are earning staggering profits. And I looked on SharePad before we came on for the TBC, and its last return on equity was 26%. Now, just to put that into the kind of context, that's about double the likes of NatWest are making. It's the kind that on board the risk, but if you are going to play an emerging market, you play into the growth of the emerging market and you go in with your eyes open and you accept the risks, then one of the best ways to do it is probably to buy shares in a bank. So if you were looking for a, if you've got the risk appetite and you know, you, you, you take on board that you could lose money, then buying something like a bank in an emerging economy that's growing quickly, it's already done well, could keep on doing well. But, you know, I take on board what Henry's said.
Yeah, yeah, good call. I like the shout. Just going to run some numbers here. I like to do my total returns comparisons here. You mentioned NatWest. I'd done my comparisons versus Lloyds because lots of people have Lloyds shares as well. And 5-year total returns compounded plus 18.3% for TBCG. Lloyds 5-year compounding at minus 1.97. 3 years plus 47.9%. Versus Lloyds plus 10.24%. Over the last 1 year, total returns for TBCG, plus 34.2% versus Lloyds minus 0.284%. Crazy numbers. Anyway, there you go. Just a research idea, ladies and gents. It's already done extremely well. Do not chase it now, but keep an eye out, you know, and we'll see what happens with that. Phil, your first stock of the day, please, sir.
Okay, so this one is a FTSE 100 stock, one that's sort of easily overlooked, one that's been going, not doing too well, but there are signs that this business is turning around, and the company is Smith & Nephew. The ticker is SN. And for those of you that don't know, this is a company, sort of a medical equipment company. Very big in things like joint replacements, so artificial knees, hips, that kind of thing. Sports medicine, ear, nose and throat type surgical products, and wound care, which is obviously very important after surgery. Now, this is a company that's been a serial underperformer. You'd think it would have been a good place, exposed to aging populations and, you know, rising spending on healthcare, but it's not been delivering up until recently. They've recently had some results, pretty good. It looks like the CEO that's gone in there is turning it around in terms of getting some revenue growth. There's still work to do on the joint replacement business, particularly in the US. But they are sticking with their targets to get their profit margins up, which are already at quite a good level, sort of mid to high teens profit margin. And this looks like a company that could start delivering pretty decent earnings growth over the next few years. And just to give you an example, you know, it's got a market cap of about $9.4 billion. So it's not a small company. But if you were to say compare it, probably one of its biggest comparators is the US company called Stryker. And this company is got a stock market value of $135 billion. It makes 25% margin, so it's more profitable than Smith & Nephew, but it's on nearly 30 times earnings, whereas Smith & Nephew is on half that multiple. And I sense that it looks like there's some momentum beginning to build in Smith & Nephew. In a good market with good fundamentals, you've got costs coming out, you've got growth, and it's at a reasonable price. And I think that's something that could be worth a look.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TwinPeaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I picked this stock as my 2024 tip of the year with a proactive challenge against fund managers. And it was doing reasonably well. I'd already bought it at the end of October of 2023 at sub £9.50. I've done my intrinsic work on this and my sum of the parts because that's what I do. I want that margin of safety. My personal belief is that this stock will get taken over. I don't want it to be taken over because another one of our good stocks will go. But my sum of the parts valuations is nearer to £20 on this stock. The results came out on the 27th and the shares went to £12. Then they got sold off during the rest of the day. Sorry, nearer to £12. And they got sold off. And it's currently sitting at £10+. I see this stock when it gets the momentum and the CEO does what he needs to do at some stage during this year or next being re-rated. Otherwise, they're going to do something to get that re-rating. Whether or not they'll consider dual listing in the US to get, you know, towards Stryker's earnings rate of 30 times versus their 16 at the moment. Is a possibility, but right now, because they've had such bad luck over the past few years where they've not really accelerated their revenue streams, they've been devalued and devalued and devalued. But somebody will either come and take them out or put them out of their misery, or they'll have to re-rate on their own. But yeah, so I already hold this stock and I'm hoping it gets a re-rating on its own steam. I do not want someone to come and offer a 50% premium and take it out at 15 quid. Because that'll be just daylight robbery all over again. And, you know, they are going to be using more and more tech, robotics and AI to do the stuff they want to do. So there's less and less intrusive operations going forward. And some of the tools and solutions that they actually provide for people will be engineered by robots and AI. So, yeah, I think they're going to be a tech stock, med tech stock, essentially, is what they are now. So I think the re-rating is going to happen at some point, but I hope it's not via M&A. Henry, have you looked at Smith & Nephew?
I really like them. Very high quality name, in my opinion. Like Phil says, it's the forecasts that get me. When I was reading the annual report, there were a lot of things in it that I really liked. They seem to have a very clear plan for how they're going to grow the business and improve their margins. And I like that. Little bit like you, I am rather concerned about it being taken out by a foreign competitor because it's such a tiddler compared to the US healthcare giants. And I think it'd be a real shame because it's a great UK success story, in my opinion. And a little bit like, you know, structural steel and coal and agriculture that we keep selling off and import and then having to import from elsewhere. Healthcare equipment is something that we need. We need a healthcare system. And if we keep selling bits of it off all over the place, we're going to be at the mercy of US giants charging us, you know, £3 million for a fake knee or whatever. God help us.
Absolutely. I mean, you touched on the word there, and Phil's touched on it as well. It's sitting here at sub £10 billion. It was a £20 billion company a couple of years back. And Stryker, I think at some stage when I looked at it first time, wasn't a dissimilar sort of valuation X amount of years ago to Smith & Nephew. And there was talk about them looking to buy Smith & Nephew back then. And since then, the valuation of Stryker has just left it in its wake. It's lapped it a couple of times. So I don't know. Something needs to give. Let's see what happens. But yeah, great company, Phil. Quality company. Just needs to tidy itself up, mate, and start accelerating its growth path. And I think it will get a re-rating, but I'd like it to be on its own steam. Anything you want to add to that, Phil?
No.
But thank you for that. There you go. You've nabbed one of mine now. You've done the battleship routine on me. So thank you for that. Not. So I didn't want to declare it just yet. Okie dokie. Where are we at now? Henry, do you want to give us your second stop, please, sir?
Yeah, I've got another UK giant here, another name which has been listed on the stock market for decades, which is a leader in its field, and which seems totally unloved by the market for reasons I can't quite fathom. The company is Victrex PLC. The ticker is VCT. This is a £1.1 billion market cap polymer manufacturer, supplying a wide range of products in the aerospace sector. They produce surface coatings for electronic screens. They've got applications in medical devices, and their products are also used in over 100 million industrial machines. The company was the first in the world to commercialize something called PEEK plastic. That's PEEK, which, for those of us that aren't chemists, is polyether ether ketone, which to you and I is a colorless thermoplastic polymer. Now, the reason I quite like this company, again, a little bit like Renishaw, it's looking at a very depressed valuation. I used to own Victrex, and the PE was significantly higher than it is now. It's currently on a PE of about 15. I think when I held it, it was over 20. It pays a nice yield of 4.5%, nearly 5%, healthy returns on equity in the double digits, mid-teens, and a global market base. And to me, this is one of these companies that an awful lot of manufacturing businesses absolutely rely on. It's a leader in polymer manufacturing. And yet we are treating it as though it's producing boogie whips to all intents and purposes. Nobody seems to want it. Nobody seems to care. Exactly, boogie whips.
What's a boogie whip when it's at home, mate? Please explain. Phil and I are northerners originally. What's a boogie whip?
If you go back in time, about 150 years, when people used to ride round on horse and carts, the cart was called a buggy, and the driver of the buggy would have a whip for the horse, and that was called a buggy whip. Now, upon a time, there were hundreds of firms producing buggy whips, and I've no doubt that the last one left produced the best buggy whip in the world, but it still disappeared.
Right. Okay. Phil, we're getting an education, mate. Did you know that, Phil? You're a historian.
No, I did not, no.
Carry on, Henry. Carry on, mate.
Forget being chauffeur-driven. Perhaps I'm driven around in a horse and buggy. Anyway, I'll leave our listeners to ponder on that one. But we just don't seem to value this business in the way that, personally, I feel we ought to. And I think, again, this is a really quality name that listeners could add to their portfolio that will do well over years, I think. It's not a business that's particularly cyclical. It's very well run. And a little bit like Renishaw or Smith & Nephew, I could easily see a foreign competitor coming and snapping it up, because it's used in such a wide variety of industrial applications. But it produces a key manufacturing commodity. So one to go and have a look at, ladies and gents.
Okay. I just pulled up some stuff here, Henry, and it came out with some data early Feb, and it said revenues were down, volume was down, basically soft guidance for the first quarter. And then today, one of the RNSs that's come out, if I've got this correct, the CEO was it might be significant for him. It doesn't appear so for me, really, as a CEO. Chief Executive Officer has gone out and purchased 50K's worth of shares. So is he calling the bottom in the shares? Or is that you saying you need to go out and buy the shares, Mr. CEO? But, you know, you've got some significant individuals that actually own the shares as well. Some, what you call, you know, quality investors like Norge Bank, that's got 8% of the shares. So it's not like anyone's shying away from buying them, but it just frustrates me that we've started the topic about shares being undervalued and possibly being threats of takeover. And it's like every share that we're talking about could be at risk of being taken over.
Absolutely. Yeah? And I think
your thoughts. Sorry, go on, Henry.
No, I was going to say, I think one of the big differences for the UK as opposed to foreign markets is domestic ownership. India has got a huge retail interest in investing. Indian shares are terrifically expensive in some sectors. US shares are on massive multiples compared to UK comparators. The Australians, their superannuation funds, which are basically their version of our pensions, have got something like a 25% weighting to Australian shares. And yet here in the UK, we just don't love domestic businesses. The pensions own 2 to 3%, I think. You know, the government pension scheme owns 2 to 3% weighting towards UK shares. And UK investors seem far more excited by investing in the likes of Apple, for example, than they do owning something like Victrex.
It's a recurring problem, mate. Yeah, we need to get the institutions buying, most definitely. I'm going to talk about another UK stock now, if I may, Phil, before you do your second one. And they've got a base in Leicester and in City Centre, actually. But essentially, they are a national and a global company. And this is essentially the industrial threads manufacturer, Coats Group. And together with their subsidiaries, they manufacture and supply industrial threads worldwide. The company provides threads, yarn, zips, trims, composites, and fabrics for use in apparel, such as children's wear, denims, intimate underwear, ladies' wear, leather wear, you name it, where they're involved in it. And obviously, they're involved in bits and pieces that go into the car seating and all the rest of it. So they've got loads and loads of stuff going on. I'm putting a big risk on this now, right? Because we're recording this and it's Wednesday the 6th. Their full year results come out March the 7th, which is tomorrow. So by the time this goes live on Friday, for those of you that are listening, you'll be going, what a muppet that Conkers Peter Higgins is, having mentioned Coats. It's been smashed to ribbons. I'm praying that they come out with reasonable results. And the reason why I'm going to say confident, let's go with it. Let's just, you know, try and put some gloss on this, is that they came out basically last year and said that they're doing reasonably well. And the shares had a bit of a pop. And I thought, you know what, it's one of those sort of companies that gets ignored. No one talks about it. Who wants to talk about yarns and threads and all the rest of it? It's had a bit of a challenging time of it. And basically, they were basically saying, you know, Coats are now confident in achieving their 2024 goals of adjusted margins of around 17%. And I'm thinking, you know what? It's not too leveraged. It's doing all right. It's looking like it's going to 17% margin. That's not too bad. Then they did something at the beginning of December. And basically, the shares jumped 12%, and they declared a halt to their pension deficit repairs program and opted to make a one-off lump sum payment of £10 million to move their pensions, because this company's running forever, to move their UK pension scheme from deficit to surplus. And that decision, this is what spooked me to think, oh, let's see what happens with them, is expected to result in a free cash flow benefit of £2 million per month going forward. And I thought, let's just see what happens with this. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about it. They're involved in all manner of different things to do with fabrics and yarns. The results are out tomorrow. Full year results are out tomorrow. Let's just see what happens. Market cap is 1.1 billion. PE, let me just get my notes up here, is sitting at 9.5, tiny little yield of 2%-ish. And I'm looking at it and thinking, why not? If you're going to buy something British, we're always going to need yarn. It's not something that can be overtaken by tech. We need fibres. We need yarns going forward. It's got so many different applications on every single bit of what, you know, what is needed around every single facet of our working life. And I'm anticipating tomorrow they're going to come out with good news. So There you go, boys. Do I just get my coat? There's a pun there. Anyone missed that one? Okay. Right. Phil, go on. You're smiling. What are your thoughts first? Rip it to shreds if you need to.
No, I rip it to shreds. I think the only thing that, for me, I think, you know, it is a decent business. Decent business, making quite good profits.
Okay.
Should be sort of a modest grower. I would think that if you look at what it sells into, you know, things like industrial clothing, things like airbags. I mean, that's cyclical. That's cyclical business.
Yep.
And I think that just going back on Victrex, I think one of the things I would disagree slightly on Victrex, I think it is cyclical. Because it's selling into like electronics, automotive, that kind of thing. And often the market can be fairly close to being right when it values shares. When you see a company on a cheap multiple, there's often a reason for it. The market will pay high multiples for not just growth, but also very steady, predictable, dependable earnings and cash flows. And I think anything that is arguably prone to falling off a cliff in a recession won't get that high valuation. I think the point about the pension fund you make is very good. You know, you're looking at big cash flow benefit, you know, you're saying $2 million a month, so that's $24 million a year. That's a big positive. And I think that lots of investors, professional investors, will stay away from companies with any kind of pension fund issue. And when the company comes out and says that it's addressing it or it's addressed it, that removes a big negative from the shares, not just in terms of its profitability and its cash flow, but just sentiment towards it. So I'd agree. There's, you know, it seems to be in a good place right now.
Fingers crossed for tomorrow's news. I know Henry will be straight into my DMs going in the morning. So yeah, we'll see. And it's been around forever, and we'd like for one of our British companies to come out and surprise the market. No AI involved, you know, not tech. It's boring yarns and threads and so on and so forth. Why not? Let's have something. It's a little bit cyclical. You're spot on there, Phil. But let's see if it translates into something good tomorrow, and they can and surprise the markets, which would be nice. And did you want to say anything else about it, Henry, or are you quite happy?
The only comment I've got, which neither of you have touched on, East manufacturing undercutting? I mean, if they produce yarns and materials and so on, is that not ripe for being undercut by foreign imports?
Absolutely spot on. If they can get it down the Nile, yeah. If they can ship it here in time, but
that's true.
That's what's been that's what's been eating the business and every other yarn. I mean, we're both from up north, mate. That's what did we used to do?
Manufacturing textiles.
What was the Industrial Revolution
Nottingham's
about?
Lace market was the
lace,
place to go.
Threads, cotton, you name it, all over the north, mate. And it's gone down to diddly squat. So this is probably one of the few remaining yarn companies, really, that's actually still doing well. It's a market cap of 1.1 billion. So it's still standing on its own. Liabilities are still sitting up there quite high, but it's still chugging along. Hopefully for many other years, they carry on paying those pensions to those people that are still alive and doing well. Anyway, I don't own it. So it's out there. Another research idea, ladies and gents, that don't want to, you can buy it for your British ISA. Put $5,000 in there for your British ISA. Anyway.
You forgot your little Union Jack.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Phil, your last stock of the day, please, sir. And don't pick another one that I own, please.
I don't know. But okay, this is a similar sort of idea to the Smith and Nephew that I spoke about a few minutes ago. It's a business that looks to be coming back after a bit of a difficult time. And the company is AG Barr, a soft drinks company. The ticker is BAG. And this is a company that's best known for Iron Brew, the fizzy drink, which is the biggest selling fizzy drink in Scotland and has been.
It's great with the sausage roll.
Yeah. And has been.
Not with the sausage rolls, mate. Come on. Carry on, Phil.
This is a company that, you know, a decade ago or even 6-7 years ago was doing really well. Stock market would put a very high multiple on its profits. And it tried to buy, it tried to, well, merge, effectively buy Britvic, another UK soft drinks company. And it didn't happen. And since then, it seems to have been struggling. Arguably, the business has been too reliant on Iron Brew and has lacked exposure to key areas of growth in the soft drinks market. And one of those is energy drinks. And it did have the license to make Rockstar Energy. And it lost the license that to Britvic. But it's gone along and bought its own energy drink now. And it's been trying to create an Iron Brew energy drink, but it's actually bought sort of 18 months ago, a company called Boost Energy. And this is a nice addition to the portfolio. And then it's also bought a tropical drinks business called Rio, which goes with its Rubicon fruit drinks business. And also a porridge products and oat drinks business called Moma.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, although you might be familiar with the oat milk business, Oatly.
Oh yes.
We'll see how they get on with this. But I like the acquisition of Boost into the energy market. Combine that with lots of things that are going on with just the production side of it becoming more efficient. And you've got the makings of a decent profit growth story here with recovering margins, a much better portfolio of drinks. One I haven't mentioned as well is they have a business called Funkin, F-U-N-K-I-N, which is a cocktails business. And that's a really good business. And you've got an outgoing CEO that's been there for 20 years, which is often a red flag. But he's being replaced by a guy who's got a lot of experience to consumer goods. He's worked for Mars, he's worked for Coca-Cola, did work for Superdry, but don't let that put you off. This is a company that's on sub 15 times earnings, good profits, good steady growth. Soft drinks are a very resilient market. They have pricing power. It's not gonna double, or it's not gonna be a multi-bagger, but it's a kind of defensive share that you can tuck away in your portfolio. And it seems to be moving in the right direction. There's arguably a much higher quality business in terms of its product base, product portfolio than it was a few years ago. Yet the valuation stock market's put on it is a lot less than it was a few years ago. And I think that makes it interesting.
I really like this company, Phil. I've liked it for a long, long time. And I'm hoping it's not going to turn into another Greggs where I'm just watching it just carry on climbing. But what I've noticed over the last year and a bit or so, is how much noise there is around the Rubicon brand, the lychee, the guava, the mango, and all the rest of it. And in America, it's absolutely flying regarding sales and people talking about it. It's like free marketing they're getting over there because people are just raving about it all the while. And I think the Rubicon brand, which they've also got an energy drink for as well, by the way, could actually be one of the drivers / catalysts for Bar AG going forward. I think that's one of the things that most people, because the thing is, everyone is synonymous with Iron Brew and it owns Scotland. But if they can get any sort of growth in America over the next 3 years, 5 years, that revenue stream from America just under the Rubicon brand could be absolutely seismic. You know, can they compete against Monster and the other energy drinks that are out there? I don't know. But they're doing okay on the non-energy drink side of it, on the Rubicon side of it. And there's almost all the different flavors, mate. You know, once you've got a student or a person or a family hooked on the Rubicon brand, they're not going to go anywhere else, you know? And it's not fit. Most of the drinks aren't fizzy as well. You know, it's just percentage of lychee, percentage of mango in there. Well, obviously got the energy drinks and the fizzy drinks as well. But yeah, I think that's an unrecognized brand that's actually doing okay, Rubicon, within their family of brands.
Just to come back on you, if it's going to be Rubicon, they don't have the US market. It's going to be...
Of course they don't. They're absolutely tiny in there. I'm just saying incremental growth.
I don't think they'll be selling it. That's the thing. They have it to sell in the UK, not in the US. I don't...
My bad. My bad. Sorry. They've got the license to sell in America.
No, the point you're making, though, in terms of the popularity of it in the US is a good one. And you know, so you hope that can become more entrenched over here. It looks in a lot better shape than it was a few years ago. It's got a much more balanced portfolio of drinks, and energy drinks are big business.
Agreed. And anything to say about AG Bar?
A little difficult, as it's consumer focused, so it's still got this element that I'm wary of. But it is one of these names in the UK that's very old. It's historically done very well. It's been high quality and reliable. And I think Phil's right, to be honest. I think buying it at an untaxing valuation might not be a bad strategy. You know, when I've picked up big blue chip names in the UK market on temporary depressions, they've generally done okay. They don't blow the lights out, but they tend to recover, you know. And this is a profitable business. It's not doing anything that is outrageous or dangerous or speculative. It's producing drinks that people like and have liked for a long time. I think it's quite a good name, quite an interesting pick.
Thank you very much, Phil. Did you want to add anything else to that, or are you finished?
The other thing about soft drinks, soft drinks generally are doing quite well at the moment. Coca-Cola, PepsiCo have been very resilient. The Coca-Cola Euro Pacific business, which has got the license for the UK and Western Europe, again doing very well. They have pricing power, and you're dealing here with relatively inexpensive items that customers can still put in their shopping trolleys or go and buy them from the corner shop. The companies can put up prices to offset their cost increases, and people will still buy them. And they don't really have sort of strong own label or private label competition for consumers to trade down to. So I think that's why they've been pretty resilient.
Brilliant. No, thank you for that, Phil. That essentially concludes it regarding the stocks I've got to cover today. Henry, do you want to quickly tell us what's been happening with the Centrepoint charity? Thank you both for those four stocks you've shared and the takeover conversations as well, Phil.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had another couple of donations in. So for those listeners that perhaps are joining us for the first time, I'll just briefly say that as we put the podcast out, we ask our audience to donate a few pounds if they can to a charity of our choice. And this year we're raising for Centrepoint, which is the UK's leading homelessness charity. I've got a goal of trying to raise £5,000 by the end of the year. If we can beat that, I will be absolutely over the moon. And we're really storming out of the blocks. We're up to 25% of the target now, £1,285 raised from 32 supporters. And since the last show, we've had £50 from Bearwood Trader. Great charity choice. Instead of sending Christmas cards to friends and less seen family, I donate the cost of cards and stamps to Centrepoint every year. Love the podcast. Welcome to Phil. Great work, guys. A fantastic idea in many ways. Very commendable and a pleasure to contribute to a wonderful community. £50 and £12.50 gift aid. No idea who that is, as you put great work, guys, in the name box, but thank you very much. We've had another £10 from A Child of the 70s. Another great podcast and happy to keep supporting this charity. Really appreciate all the effort that goes into producing the podcasts and thoroughly enjoy the excellent discussions. We've had £20 and £5 gift aid from Nige 200 SMA. All three of you do a superb job and every day is a school day. A very good cause, and I'm happy to help towards your total. Many thanks, Nige from Leicester, a long time ago. Thanks, Nige. And finally, someone called Lester Pete. Excellent podcasts. Well done, guys, and good for you in raising money for charity as you go. Hashtag be kind. Hashtag no paywall. £25 and £6.25 gift aid. So thank you very much, everybody. That's honestly heartwarming.
Brilliant. Now, thanks everyone for those donations. And if you've got any change over the next couple of weeks, please do drop us another donation if you haven't done so, or a first donation you haven't done so before. Henry, share us the URL, and thanks everyone again.
It's for those of you that would like to donate, it is www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPete'sChallenge24. That's TwinPete'sChallenge24.
Thank you for that. And Lester Pete, whoever you are, if you want to come down for a pint, I'll be in the Memphis Hub on the 25th with the coach, the award-winning coach of Leicester Riders, because we're doing a fundraising night, an event there. So please come along for a drink if you want to come along with Rob. He's going to be there, the coach of Leicester Riders, the fantastic basketball team. Right, quick heads up here, Phil. This is from a chap called Compound Gains, and he said to me, please do this for me, please. Said, hey, Conkers, please could you let Phil Hoakley know that his book was referenced in this podcast? From Peter Sleggers, Compounding Quality, Lessons from the Investing Legends. And you were mentioned there, amongst talking with billions. Billionaires, Phil, your book. You know what I mean? So kudos to you, sir. All that work is paid off without in that book. I want to say a big shout out to Jam for You, at Jam4U_75. He's received all his Harriman House books and his Sherpad prize for winning the competition for 2023, and he's absolutely thrilled with it. And he writes, some nice bedtime reading just arrived with my books courtesy of first prize coming in the Twin Peaks Challenge, Sherpad, Sharescope, Harriman House. There should be no excuses now, he's put, regarding getting better at investing. There's a nice picture there of his own, of his books. And also a big shout out to Smudge Dan, who came second. Delighted to receive these investing books this morning, courtesy of second place finish in Conkers 3's Twin Peaks Challenge. Quite a bit of reading to get through. Thanks to Harriman House for providing the prizes and sending them through. So kudos to you too, and very well done. And ladies and gents, that is a wrap. Henry, thank you ever so much. Oh, Phil's got something to say.
Yeah, sorry, Phil. I'd just like to make a small announcement. Now, I'm no longer on Twitter or X, but I have started a blog, recently just set up a blog, keeping it casual and friendly and free. And it's called, you can find it at investingstuff.substack.com. And what you will see on there is very short sort of opinion pieces from me, links to my work, also links to other people's work. And just to say that going forward, things that we discuss on the podcast, like the Sharepad data, for example, which we use, it's going to be on that on that website. So please check it out, investingstuff.substack.com.
Brilliant. Good to have you back writing, mate, even more so. Thank you ever so much for that. And the three of us also are going to be trying our level best going forward to engage and share some other additional bits and pieces on the SharePad chat on there so far. We've not really been engaging with that as much as we should do. And I just want to say a big thank you to all of you, ladies and gents, that kindly had a read of my article, 8 Common Investing Mistakes That All Investors Make. So thank you ever so much for giving that a little read and giving us your feedback. Henry, do you want to close with anything, sir?
Just thank you very much for having me again, chaps. And thank you very much to the audience for tuning in, as always. Don't be strangers. Send us your feedback. Send us a like. And don't forget to share and subscribe to the channel.
Thank you very much. Phil, thank you ever so much again for coming on here and raising it up the level or two. Henry and I are just sitting there going, oh, that's good, that's good. Brilliant. Thank you again, sir. We look forward to seeing you. I hope to see some faces on Saturday at the Master Investor Show. But until then, we'll see you. The three of us will see you again in 2 weeks' time, which will be the 20th. We'll be recording is the next time we're recording. And we'll put this out on Friday for you. I am now crossing everything regarding Coates Group coming out with its data tomorrow. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless. Stay kind. And look after each other. Until next time, goodbye from all three of us. Bye-bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.